Hi, this is Ann Greiner.
And Suzanne Zolbanko calling from Catalyst for Payment Reform. How's it going?
Oh, great. Nice to hear from you.
Well, thanks for picking up. I was calling today to catch up with you on what's happening with patient-centered medical homes. But before we get started, I just want to let you know we've got an audience listening in. And maybe for their sake, you could let them know a little bit about yourself and your organization.
Sure. I'm the president and CEO of the Patient-Centered Primary Care Collaborative, sometimes known as the PCPCC, and I've had a career in the alphabet soup of quality organizations here in D.C.
Thanks so much for that. So, you know, in case there are people listening who don't know what a patient-centered medical home is, can you describe it briefly?
Sure, and it actually was the impetus for the founding of the PCPCC. A group of specialty organizations in primary care and employers got together to advance a care delivery and payment model called the patient-centered medical home because they were dissatisfied with the kind of primary care that was being offered, and that was in the mid-2000s. Now we have patient-centered medical homes around the country.
And how has the definition and use of patient-centered medical homes evolved over time?
Sure. Let me first clear up some confusion that some have. This is actually not a physical space. It is a method of the way you get primary care. And the notion is that this kind of advanced primary care gives patients ready access to their PCP, after hours connection to getting services, a more proactive approach to getting care, by the use of registries, so letting you know if you need to come in for some kind of screening or follow-up care, really good prevention and health promotion, and care integration and coordination, which is one of the most important things that people look for in primary care. The definition has evolved, and I'm happy to tell you more about that.
Well, maybe before we get into the definition, I'm just going to share that I, for the first time ever from my primary care practice, got a reminder to get a flu shot, not just once, but twice, and it worked. It got me to go in there and get it done. That was the first time I'd ever really experienced any proactive communication. So what other areas of care have been really influenced by this model?
So if you're have a chronic condition in particular, a patient-centered medical home practitioner would be looking at everybody in their practice that has diabetes and noticing if people need to come in for regular screening to make sure that their diabetes is not progressing. May have a range of services to help people with diabetes to change what they eat and how much they exercise. So there's a way to target patients and really proactively provide them with a set of services. Ideally, a patient-centered medical home is also thinking about the emotional side of care. And if you have mental health issues or substance use disorder of any kind, also supporting you there, because we know that people are complex and there can be multiple things that a primary care practice could really help attend to. So that is the ideal.
In terms of how this concept has evolved over time, I mean, you just brought up mental health. I know there's a big thrust right now in the world of behavioral health and substance use disorder treatment to try to integrate it more with primary care. Is that one of the ways that it's evolved?
You know, from the beginning, well, nearly the beginning, there was this idea of whole person care. So mental health was always something that the model aspired to do. But first off, it, I think, paid much more attention to the basics, you know, getting people more ready access to see primary care so you didn't have to wait 6 weeks to get a visit, making sure that you had a place to go after hours and on the weekends and the like. In recent years, there's been much more work to integrate behavioral health, but we've got a ways to go. And I think we know in our country this is really becoming a very pressing issue. And so, you know, we here at the PCPCC, we're working on behavioral health and primary care integration. We see it as something very central to our mission.
So what is the evidence that this model of care works better than, you know, the absence of a medical home? And are there certain circumstances where it's had more of a significant impact?
So the model has spread very quickly. I will answer your question about the evidence over a relatively short period of time. So over the last dozen years, it spread like rapid fire. Private plans adopted the model, as did states, as did Medicaid, and then the federal government. So we estimate that between 20 and 25% of primary care physicians, I can't tell you about the nurses or the PAs, clinical pharmacists, and others on the team, but we think about 20 to 25% of primary care physicians are practicing in a patient-centered medical home. The evidence, we put out a regular review of the evidence, and the evidence generally shows that after a PCMH is implemented for 4 or 5 years, so that it does take a while for this model to take hold for lots of reasons, you begin to see reduction in costs. A lot of that is reduction in hospitalization, ER use, and readmission. You also see some improvements in quality. That's not always the case. And generally reductions in utilization. We did a report in 2016 that looked at 1,500 articles in the peer-reviewed journal. We culled that back to a little under 50 that met our very rigorous criteria. And the findings that I just mentioned is what we found through that lit review.
You talked about cost savings, and maybe you could talk a little bit more about the payment model, since obviously at Catalyst for Payment Reform, we focus on that. Is the current approach to paying primary care allowing primary care physicians to do what a patient-centered medical home is supposed to do, or are changes to payment needed, and are we there with whatever changes are needed, or is there more still to be done?
Well, I think you've asked the central question, really the most important question. Many people outside of primary care don't realize how much we undervalue primary care in terms of investment in it. We don't have yet a standardized measure, but the best research that we've got shows that we spend between 5 to 7 cents of the healthcare dollar on primary care. The model has evolved since it was first described in 2007, where we hope that it integrates behavioral health, deals with addiction issues, addresses the social determinants of health, and the list goes on, and yet we don't invest much in this model. We also think that the fee-for-service chassis is not the best way to deliver primary care, in that it ties you to a visit and to more volume, and neither of those are necessarily good for patients or what patients are seeking. You know, patients want care that maybe is through telemedicine or just a quick email or over the phone, and they don't necessarily want to come in for a visit and take time out of their day or out of their work day. So we really do think that not only do we need to move away from fee-for-service, but we also need to invest more upstream so that we can reduce the downstream costs and improve population health.
So in our studies at CPR, we've seen that patient-centered medical homes are sort of paid through a combination of fee-for-service, you know, sort of still that a la carte, you know, for every visit and procedure and test, but maybe added on to that a care coordination fee that tries to cover some of that not usual business, you know, emailing patients back, talk to them at night, maybe providing a care coordinator. And in addition to a care coordination fee, we've seen also the use of pay for performance, you know, for achieving certain quality metrics or even shared savings, where if for a given set of patients, you know, the practice is able to beat some kind of financial target that they might get to share in some of those savings. Does that resonate with you for what you've seen? And what do you think is the next thing we have to do in terms of the methods that are used?
Well, it is what we see, and we also know that leaders at CMMI are hoping that through their leadership, and also some private payers are talking about this as well, we can move more quickly to risk. So, you know, have less of the funds be tied to fee-for-service payment, and that's a trend that we see. We also think about how does the PCMH relate to the rest of the medical neighborhood. And we did a study that came out in August where we looked at how does PCMH relate to, for example, accountable care organizations? And what we found in a first ever research study of its kind, and that shocked me, I was really stunned that there wasn't other research like this, that the most successful ACOs had a strong foundation of PCMH. And when you think about it, it makes a lot of sense, because if the ACO is focused also on reducing ER visits and readmissions and important quality measures, and the primary care practice is as well, well, then you've got that alignment, and everybody across the system is working on the same set of strategies, and it really can be a beautiful thing when that happens. So that's what we found in our study, and we're, you know, talking to officials at CMMI and private payers about the importance of having a strong foundation of advanced primary care in these models.
That's really helpful, because I know sometimes people wonder how those two things meet, the patient-centered medical home and accountable care organization. So that's a really good description. And I want to thank you so much for answering these questions. I think it sounds like patient-centered medical homes are still a really central strategy, and one that, you know, for which the evidence is building support. One last quick question is, do you think that these are more applicable for, you know, high-risk, high-needs patients, or, you know, do you think the average patient population would benefit as well?
Well, I think that the high need, you know, patients with multiple chronic conditions, et cetera, are going to really want to take advantage of what a PCMH offers in terms of, you know, this suite of services to help them with, you know, a complex sets of needs that they have. But every patient wants to get in to see their primary care physician when they need to, and would certainly like to have the kinds of reminders that you mentioned, you know, the flu shot, or the immunization for your children, or the reminder to help you make sure that you're doing all you can to, you know, prevent things that you can prevent, and then to stay healthy and help you manage if you do get sick.
Well, as we go into flu season, we can all relate to how beneficial that would be. Thank you so much, Anne. I really appreciate your time, and I look forward to seeing how this space evolves and learning from you along the way.
It's great to talk to you, and thanks for all your leadership on the payment side.
My pleasure.